This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Good Monday to you, and a good Labor Day Monday to you. We've got so much college football to dissect, and of course, the NFL season is starting on Thursday night. You know, we all know that football and baseball and basketball, whatever sport it is, there's long seasons. And you really can't take a lot out of one game, especially in sports where there's 82 games, there's 162 games. And even in the NFL, where there's 17 games, you think you may know something in week one, but you don't know anything until you get week five or six or seven. Same thing in college football. There are teams that did not look good, and there are teams that looked great. And you can't make definitive statements because we really, in the end, don't know how the season is going to play out. But that doesn't mean we can't take away very, very important things from outcomes in the first week of a sport, in the first weekend of, let's say, college football. And the one thing that I can take away from the Colorado Buffaloes upsetting TCU is that if you are a coach in college football at a high division where the anticipation is championship, playoff, that kind of setting, you better get on the transfer portal as best you possibly can. Because for Deion Sanders, it worked incredibly. Now, most of us thought it would. But most of us thought that in the end, how he did it was controversial. You may like how Deion Sanders upended the entire roster. And you may have thought in a quasi yet still amateurish but not quite sport, it was actually kind of bold, aggressive, almost like it kind of, I don't want to say rude, but sort of the way it was done. But it worked because that's exactly what Colorado needed to have happen. That team won one game last year. And that those players that were on the team last year did not deserve to be back on a team when you hire a guy like Deion Sanders to change the program around. His job was not to take the current roster that he inherited and flip it and make them good football players. His job was to bring in football players. His job was to make the Colorado Buffaloes relevant. That was one of the most exciting, fun football games I've seen in a long time. Because of the show that Deion Sanders is. I've seen opening games that go back and forth that are a ton of fun, and both quarterbacks are playing well, and both teams are scoring, and I've seen games like that plenty of times. But because of the Deion hype, and because he markets himself so well, and he markets everything he touches so well, it became the game millions and millions of people were curious about. Right, I said I kind of wanted it to be difficult for Deion Sanders. I knew he was going to be successful at Colorado, but I kind of wanted him to eat a little humble pie a little bit at the beginning of the season. But that's gone. That's gone. That was a brilliant coaching job with great talent. Deion Sanders can coach. His kid is a next-level quarterback. Travis Hunter is amazing on any level he wants to play at. And again, we've got more games. They're going to play Oregon. They're going to play USC. There's more games down the road. Don't get me wrong. I mean, TCU is not the same TCU that played for the national championship. I want to make that clear. That's the same school, but that's not the same team. I mean, they returned very, very few people that were on that team last season. I had a brand new quarterback, brand new running back, a whole bunch of players are not on that team anymore. But it was enough for people to go, look, what is happening in Boulder, the way he put that team together, the way he said, all right, I'm bringing Louie, right? I'm bringing my luggage. It's Louie. Like, the way that was phrased may have been a little sharp, but it's exactly what every single coach in college football should be doing right now. How do I build a team around people who are dissatisfied with where they are? Look at last night with Florida State and Keon Coleman. Michigan State's wide receiver that's now a Seminole and was electric last night. This is how you're going to do it. And it's going to change the perception of every hire that is going to come into a program. You used to go, okay, we're hiring Jack Smith. He is here. The team went 2-10 last season, and you just inherit the kids you got, and you start recruiting, and you start getting your guys out there, and you start convincing players, you know what, we're building something here at State U. We'd like you to be part of it. It's a long journey, but you know what, with you and you and you, we think we can turn it around by your junior year. Those days are over, and any coach that is caught up in that, major college coach that's caught up with that, is going to be shown the door quicker than he's ever been shown the door before. You now have to sell everybody. Not just the junior in high school that's thinking about where he's going before his senior year, the kid that's, you know, anybody that's thinking about transferring, you have to sell to every player that even may be satisfied with where they are. Because I'm telling you, what was my biggest takeaway from Colorado TCU? Deion is going to have a train of players pouring in to Boulder to be part of what he's doing. That's a coach that cares. That is a coach that is warm, energetic. He's a Hall of Famer. And kids are having fun there. It's a beautiful, beautiful place to be, to live and work. It's going to be the Big 12. He's going to have an ocean of opportunity. Players are going to be looking for a new place to go. Colorado is now on the list. And this is we knew that this was the game, right? We always kind of knew that the changing dynamics of college sports, with NIL, players are going to go to where they can get playing time, exposure, and make some money. With transfer portal, now kids are like, I'll play for 4 different schools in 4 different years, or 3 different schools in 3 different years. I don't care. I want to go where I'll play. I want to go where I'll be happy. And if I'm on my second team, third team, it doesn't matter. And that's the thing. You've got to be selling your program. Who sold their program better this weekend than Deion Sanders? It was a blast to watch. It really was. They've got some real talent. Jimmy Horn, Travis Hunter. I don't know how long he can do this, playing both ways. He's already a Heisman candidate. That was the other thing that popped up. Shador Sanders and Travis Hunter becoming Heisman candidates right as soon as that game was over. You know, was it Chris Gamble was the last major two-way player we've seen in college football 20 years ago, 21 years ago, in the Ohio State versus Miami. And this kid, I don't know how he did it. It was boiling hot there on Saturday. It was boiling hot. And he played both sides, played 129 snaps for the Buffaloes on both sides of the ball. But look, in the end, I don't know how many games Deion Sanders is going to win in Boulder. I don't know where the season is going to go, up, down, sideways, left. I don't know. But I do know now that, one, this was one of the most significant hires we've seen in college football in a while. Immediate impact. Immediate change. Like that. Because, again, you are not talking in sort of the old formula. You would take a coach. You would bring him in. He would have a roster. He'd have to work through that roster. Players would come, go, whatever. He'd bring in his players. And we always said 2-3 years, you would start to see the results of whatever this coach was starting to build. Deion went, the business of this sport may be cruel, but those of you in this locker room who dreamed of one day wearing a Buffaloes jersey and going out there at Folsom Field and winning games and watching Ralphie run while you were standing on the sidelines, well, guess what? Those days are now over because I'm the coach of this team. And I'm sorry, but last year you went 1-11, and I don't have much room for anybody that was on a team that went 1-11. You may find that almost cruel to a young man. But that's the new way Deion is going to set up college football. And every athletic director is going to be paying attention to something like that. what in... I mean, it was like backyard football. It was incredible. Like, it was the kind of game where you go, oh, look, and don't get me wrong, Colorado wasn't perfect by any means, and neither was TCU. They were giving up huge plays. No one seemed to stop anybody. Colorado couldn't stop the run until they absolutely had to at the end. It was a game in which both teams had some deficiencies, but it didn't matter. It was a shootout. And when you have shootouts, sometimes you go, screw it, I don't care. I don't care what the special teams were. I don't care what defense. I just want to see fun. This is what it was. And to see every single player on that field afterwards just going up to him and hugging him and knowing, because he told them over and over again, you're going to win. You're going to win. You're going to win. You're going to win. Who wouldn't want to play for a guy like that? There's only one other coach I can think of over the weekend that made this sort of huge splash. I mean, there was, like, you know, Texas State won against Baylor and you know, whatnot. And there were a couple of, you know, cool games that were going on. Wyoming beat Texas Tech. But Mike Norvell in Florida State last night. You got Brian Kelly. You got LSU coming to town. It's Orlando. It's a neutral site, but still, it's, you know, it's not that far from your campus, and you've got to face them, number 5 team. Everyone's got high expectations for you, and you deliver with Jordan Travis and Keon Coleman and an LSU team that made mistake after mistake after mistake. We'll talk more college football. What a fun weekend. It continues tonight with Clemson at Duke. That is the only game left on the college football schedule. It's Tony D. Ron Culver. Good Labor Day to you. Wake up call.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Yeah, this was the other big bit of news over the weekend, the passing of Jimmy Buffett, 76 years old. And boy, I tell you right now, I never saw it. Like, all weekend long, it was nothing but people on social media just, I love Jimmy Buffett, I'm a huge fan, this breaks my heart, blah, blah, blah.
Radio stations doing tributes.
Yeah, completely.
You know, I mean, that amazed me, because you and I were talking before the show. I mean, he wasn't ever, like, big.
Yeah,
But he's been a part of our lives forever.
That's why I was shocked he was 76.
Yeah.
Because I was like, man, I don't remember a part of my life where there hasn't been a Jimmy Buffett song playing at some point.
Some collaboration with another artist.
Some record. I don't, you know.
Yeah, so, that's why I thought it was weird. Like, you know, certain radio stations were doing, you know, it's like, oh, this is, you know, we're doing Jimmy Buffett tributes. And like every half hour they were playing a Jimmy Buffett song.
So I will say this. I liked Jimmy Buffett a lot. I really liked Jimmy Buffett, but I didn't love Jimmy Buffett. And the reason I say I didn't love Jim is nothing to do with him. It has nothing to do with negative. I feel like if you say you love Jimmy Buffett, you're a parrot head, and I'm not a parrot head. Right, like I gotta save the word love for people who really did love him, because there's another level of enjoying an artist, and the people who loved Jimmy Buffett enjoyed Jimmy Buffett and his music in a way I did not. So I'm not even going to put myself in the category of the level of fandom that I saw over the weekend.
See,
I had friends I did not know had seen him 30 times, yeah. 30 times to see an artist. I've seen my favorite artists once, maybe twice. That's it. I can't imagine going to see a guy 30 times in my lifetime. Like, I had a friend of mine who said my first time I saw him was in 1980 when I was, you know, 15 years old. You know, now I'm 60, whatever, and I've seen him 30 times. Every time he comes to Denver, I see him. Every time he comes to all my friends had traveled to see him. Like, they went on tour and went, like, almost like Grateful Dead-like following.
Right.
So I can't say I love Jimmy Buffett, because if I say I love Jimmy Buffett, it puts me on a category of parrot head that I'm not. I just like his music. That's really it.
Yeah,
I like his music.
I would say I'm close to a parrot head. I'm a parrot head that never went to a concert. And it wasn't that I didn't try to go. It was like every single time, you know, I was set to go, something came up.
Okay, so if you were in a room of parrot heads... They were like, hey, fellow Pearheads, how are you? And they're how many times have you seen Jimmy? And you said zero.
I would be the one with the fake beak.
Okay, I was going
to
say,
like,
right, would you be shown
act
the
like
door?
A Parrothead. I would have been in the back of the room.
Yeah.
I would have been last to get a cookie.
Hey, seriously, it was like my buddy would go, I've seen him 30 times. And then a mutual friend would be like, I saw him 22. Like, people were posting ticket stubs from, like, 1987, like, at some concert venue somewhere. You know, and it was just memory after memory after memory of people who were talking about their love for Jimmy Buffett. I mean, I saw more pictures of people at the Jimmy Buffett concert from 92 or 97 or 86 or whatever it is. And so I have zero of those pictures. Zero. And so I can't put myself on that category.
I was in line to go, and then it was like, oh, he's playing this Friday. I can't this Friday. I got work, or I'm going out of town, or I'm doing this. And it was always, you know, just never – the stars never aligned for me to go to at least one show to officially become a parrot head. But I'm that parrot head with the fake beak, the fake wings that
gotcha.
You can totally
that
tell
sense.
That I'm not
sure.
– it's not me.
The term island escapism was, you know, is the one that, you know, is best describes his sort of style. And
that's another thing, because one of my favorite things about him is I don't know what genre of music he is.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, I love what you said. It's just, you know, it's just feel good music.
It's just feel good music.
It's just good music.
You throw it on, you know all the words. It's been playing, they've been playing for decades. The other thing, too, is that he embodied, again, like a lifestyle that a lot, like, okay, if I take Axl Rose and if I take, like, Bret Michaels, like, I can envision rock star lifestyle, right? Trash in hotels, groupies in the lobby. Like, I can, you know, drugs on the bus.
Drugs, alcohol.
Right. Exactly. Like, you can all envision sort of this rock star lifestyle. Then there are a few artists where the way they sing or what they sing about, you think that their lifestyle, like we were talking about John Denver,
right?
Like, you either think West Virginia country boy or Colorado.
You couldn't picture
John
Denver in a high-rise New York City apartment.
Exactly, right? And that's the same thing with Jimmy Buffett. He gave you this idea that every time he was singing a song, he was on a sailboat, he was on a beach, he was drinking something, and it was just a sunset in the background, most likely a margarita. And there was a sunset in the background, and there were waves coming at his feet. Like, that's everything about him. Like, that's the image he wanted to portray. That's the image he wanted to live, and it worked. It worked. It was the way people, like, go, one day I want to do that. Like, one day I hope my whole life is nothing more than, you know, chasing a shaker of salt while the sun's going down on my sailboat in Key West.
Yep.
Like, that's all I want.
Or the fact that, you know, it's like, hey, it doesn't matter where you are.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Crack it open.
I want to think about drinking. I want to think about eating a cheeseburger. I want to think about palm trees. I want to think about sailboats. I want to think about waves, sunsets. That's the image. He made you want
that lifestyle.
Exactly.
Like,
you wanted to move
to Key West. You want to move to a beach somewhere. I mean, it's, you know, and I mean, I lived in Hawaii for 5 years, and it was, you know, I mean, it's close to that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, you just waste away. I mean, that's what it was. It's like sometimes you just sit there on the beach and you just waste a day away doing nothing.
So I just, I give him a lot of credit. And he was a billionaire.
Yes.
We were talking about this before the show. He was a billionaire. And before you think, oh, yeah, of course, he's an art. No, that's
musician,
not. You don't get. Musicians don't become billionaires. You become billionaires when you invest your money right. And he invested it. Him and Warren Buffett were very good friends. And in the early 80s, he just hung on to whatever that guy was doing. And he made himself a fortune.
And, you know, and he did this
with the right investments.
And he did the same thing Warren Buffett did. Because, I mean, the most surprising thing to me about Warren Buffett is that he lives in a tract home neighborhood.
Right.
And he lives in the same 3-bedroom house that he's lived in for years. And, you know, Jimmy Buffett did the same thing. I mean, he didn't go out and buy, like, oh, let me get this super uber mansion that's, you know, 20 stories or, you know, 20,000 football fields long or anything like that. He's just like, no, just a modest little home on a beach, and that's all he wanted.
That's all he wanted. That's it. Just go chill.
Yeah.
And, of course, the margarita business, the restaurants, the retirement community, everything you put your name on, is you make a ton of money doing that.
But it's all advice he got from his, I think he referred to him as his long-lost cousin.
Long-lost cousin,
Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett. So, yeah, rest in peace, Jimmy Buffett. But, yeah, yeah. Parrot heads all around the world, I sympathize with your loss. So I know it's hard to lose a guy from it's a bummer, means so much to you artistically.
The best thing always about a musician is that they live on.
That's right.
Because you know, the music lives on. And for a lot of people, you may not even know Jimmy Buffett was still alive. You may have thought he passed away a long time ago because of his the longevity of his career.
And the same thing I said about the reason I can't say I love Jimmy Buffett is because I'm not a Parrothead is actually something I learned very early in my radio career when Jerry Garcia died and a DJ said the same thing in the building. He said, I like the Grateful Dead. I don't love them like they love him.
Right.
So I can't say I love him. And I was like, oh, that's a very good point. I thought that was a very good point.
Because that's a different level of love.
That's
though,
a
man.
Different level of fandom. But it's the same kind of thing. If you're willing to see a person 30 times in your lifetime, then there is a connection you have with that musician that I can't even touch.
So is the only one left right now would be Fish? The Fish heads?
Maybe so. I'm trying to think of another one right off the top of my head, but I
can't think of another artist.
Kiss Army? Yeah.
But are they still performing? Because I know Fish still performs.
I don't think they are. Yeah, Fish still performs. I keep saying Kiss doesn't perform, but they keep coming back all the time. They keep Gene is just they always realize there's so much money out there.
Now he's
Gene likes that.
Gene's got to be close to being a billionaire, right?
I got to think so, man.
He did the intelligent thing and got into the marketing side.
He's completely like that's how I became a Kiss fan when I was a kid. I was
the lunchbox.
The lunchbox, the color forms. Seriously, like there were kids things with Kiss on it.
Weren't they at Scooby-Doo?
I think they were. There was also Kiss and the Phantom of the Amusement Park or something. There was some like made-for-TV movie.
Okay.
And Peter Criss was so drunk they had to dub his lines, and it's so bad. It's so bad. Well, but yeah, that's the next. That's the next group, I think.
The brilliancy about them is that, you know, when you put the makeup on, you know who they are.
Right.
There was no mistake in it. I mean, other bands can kind of get whitewashed with each other. Like you mentioned, you know, like Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue, Poison. I mean, they all can get kind of whitewashed together.
Sure.
They're all kind of similar, but Kiss kind of stood out because of the makeup, and that appeals to kids.
That's right.
Put them in a cartoon.
Well, rest in peace, Jimmy Buffett. We got our hush puppies on for the Labor Day weekend show as we move on.
But we're going to avoid stepping on Pop-Tarts.
That's right. Exactly right. All right, we'll continue. More from college football. All right, so last night, how big of a disaster was it for LSU, at least this year? We'll talk about that next, coming up. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hope you all had a good time watching the opening weekend of college football, or week two if you were into the week zero thing, whatever it is.
Admit this right now.
Yeah.
It felt good.
It did feel great.
It's still hot as you know what here, but it felt fallish. I mean, I even went out and we got an apple cinnamon Febreze. I'm like, just start spraying it in the house. I don't care.
I heard a broadcaster make this point about football, and I always thought this was a really great way to put it. When football comes back, it is like seeing an old friend you haven't seen for a while, and you immediately start having fun.
Yeah.
Right?
You pick up right where you left off.
It's been a while. You haven't seen them. They pull into your driveway, and you immediately are right back to doing what you guys did when you hung out all the time. Like, because the first game I watched was Colorado TCU. So Saturday morning, it started about 11 o'clock. First thing I saw was that. I even watched, and I don't do this, I don't watch a lot of the pre-shows. I don't watch Countdown or anything like that. I like the shows. I think they serve a good purpose. I just don't watch them.
Sometimes.
It is a little much. There's too, like, to me, here's the thing. It's great for people who are doing something else, right? And then they want to get they want to get, like, the full menu of what's going on. I spend my whole week, like, look at these games, writing about these games,
talking about them.
Yeah, so I don't really care like what Desmond Howard has to say about them.
And the funny thing, I mean, this was the game that we were talking about the most. And you, if I could find it, I would replay it. But I know you'll just say it outright. You're hoping for Deion Sanders' loss.
I was hoping for
a struggle. To humble him down, to bring him down a little bit.
Like, he just kept going, y'all don't believe. I'm like, yeah, but it's tough. It's not as easy as you may think, yeah. Deion. And yet...
Maybe it is.
His kid is next level good. His kid is fantastic. He's NFL good. Like, he is that those passes were laser beams. I mean, he was accurate. He threw for 500 yards, 5 touchdowns, set a school record.
That's what you do. Of course, that was going to happen.
Lit up the Horn Frogs on the road. So I don't watch the pregame stuff, but I respect the shows. They're great. But I did watch the SEC Network because they were broadcasting downtown Nashville for the Tennessee-Virginia game. And I thought that, you know, I'll get a little taste of that. And that was kind of fun. So the first game I watch, and yeah, the initial, wow, football's back. This is awesome. Settle in. And then after a while, you're just like, oh, no, this is cool. Like, I'm bouncing around. I'm checking other games. I'm looking up the scores on my computer. Like, it becomes like routine again. As quickly as you miss it, it comes back. You quickly get back into the flow. So last night, LSU and Florida State played in Orlando, and it was the big Sunday Labor Day weekend national-ranked game, right? They usually throw one of these at you every single year. Neutral site extravaganza. And last night was Florida State that closed out their season really strong, and LSU that was ranked 5th in the country. They had played a game last year. It was close. Florida State edged out LSU. They were rematching. That game was in New Orleans. This game is in Orlando. So the schools did a home-and-home quote thing where the neutral site was close enough to their campuses, but it still was a neutral site. And LSU lost. Not only did they lose, their second half collapse was unbelievable. It was 17-14 LSU at halftime. And this was one of those, hey, this looks like a really good matchup. Both teams are making a few mistakes here. There was some drop passes, penalties, bad decisions on the goal line, a sack that LSU took on 4th and 1 at the goal line, 4th and goal at the 1. And then after that, it was all Florida State. After halftime, the Seminoles just bombed them out. Jordan Travis, the quarterback for the Noles, he threw 5 touchdowns, 342 yards. Keon Coleman, who I mentioned earlier, he's the transfer from Michigan State. He was the big wide receiver that everybody wanted when he wanted to leave East Lansing. He was magnificent. He had 3 touchdowns, 122 yards receiving, and LSU couldn't get out of their own way. It was mistake after mistake. They had a missed. They Jaden Daniels got sacked on that 4th down play at the goal line. They muffed a punt. They dropped passes. He overthrew guys. Defensively, they couldn't stop anybody. It was a complete collapse. Now, how much does this hurt LSU in the way we do college football today? That doesn't hurt them tomorrow. Well, tomorrow when I say tomorrow, I mean next year. There's going to be a 12-team playoff, and you'll be able to survive games like this. Neutral site, ranked opponent, blah, blah, blah. All right, you can survive it. But LSU is now in a real pickle, and it's already week one. It's already week one, and they're in a pickle. Last year, they lost a close game at the Superdome, but if you play well enough in your SEC schedule, you might hope for something to happen. You didn't lose an SEC game. They had Alabama at home last year. They've got Alabama and Tuscaloosa this year. LSU has got some tough road games. And here's the other thing. If you are going to win the SEC, you are likely going to have to beat Georgia in the SEC title game. So if LSU has a good enough season to win the West, they're going to have to beat Georgia. They can't afford to lose again. And when you've got Alabama on the road, possibly Georgia in a neutral site if all things work out, that is really difficult to do. LSU's potential chance of getting into the playoff. Remember, this was preseason ranked 5, so take that for whatever that means to you. Nothing, everything, something, but not a lot, whatever. But they got to go to Oxford this year. I mean, there is some tough places they've got to go, and they have now got to win everything. They cannot afford 2 losses. You're not getting 2 losses into the college football playoff. Next year, you can get 2 losses into the college football playoff, but this year is not. And I give it to Brian Kelly. He had to know this was something like this was coming. And when he got to LSU, right? Notre Dame is one of the top jobs in college in sports, being the head coach at Notre Dame. It doesn't have the same, you know, prominence that it used to have. It sort of lacked a little bit of its luster, but nevertheless, it's still Notre Dame. It's still a prestigious school. They're an independent. They're a major independent. It was a good gig. But you know what his problem was? And he knew it. You can't win a national title at Notre Dame. It's just too hard. It's really hard. You can get into the playoff, and Notre Dame did, or you can get into the you can play Alabama like as one versus two, but they didn't stand a chance. And he wanted to challenge himself by going to an SEC program, recruit a different kind of player, a five-star level player that wanted to win titles in the South. And this is what you get, though. What you get is every game like this is going to have a ripple effect that is going to cause you lots and lots of sleep. There is no error now. There is no room for error. You could have caught yourself a breather if you had won last night. You've got Grambling on the road at a Mississippi State team you should beat, Arkansas you should beat, and get yourself geared up for the end of the month when you go on the road to face Ole Miss. But now you've put yourself in a very tight situation if you want this season to matter in the playoff, which is why you got to LSU in the first place. Now, don't get me wrong. You can take a breather and go at it next year when we've expanded this thing to see how it goes. But that's why last night's game was big. Think about it on the flip side for Florida State. They've got this game out of the way. This was a huge game for them on their schedule because the ACC is not really loaded with tons and tons of landmines like the SEC is. Yep, there's going to be that game against Clemson that's coming up later this month, and they've got Florida at the end of the month, and who knows if the Gators are just a touch better. Yeah, they'll play Miami, but North Carolina's not on their schedule, right? So here's Florida State with one win already. You could lose to Clemson and still be in this thing. So they did away with division, so they've got to be one of the top two teams in the ACC. You could lose to Clemson, their only loss, and still play for the championship. So that's why that went mattered for Mike Norvell last night. And Brian Kelly, yeah, just yikes. Yeah, especially the way they played. It was one thing last year, just a back-and-forth game. It was a little bit of a surprise for Florida State. And then LSU misses an extra point opportunity, and Florida State comes away with the win. This year, last night was in that second half. It was almost like they gave up. I mean, it looked like LSU was just – I remember just watching one play in particular, Florida State, Coleman – I think it was Coleman, I want to say. No, maybe not. Maybe it was Bell. Jaheim Bell was from South Carolina. He just rumbled into the end zone, and I didn't see an LSU guy make a significant attempt to bring him down in the second half. I mean, that's how quick that was. So three touchdowns in the fourth quarter put this bad boy away. Florida State goes on to 1-0. So a great, really fun weekend.
Yeah, but I mean, almost an embarrassment for LSU.
Really was. I mean, that second half especially.
Yeah.
Especially. Because there was just tons and tons of mistakes. As a coach, you want to take the blame, but secretly, privately, with loved ones, you go, those kids, why were they dropping passes all over the floor?
Honestly. Now, all
night long. He was missing guys, throwing over guys. It was crazy.
I know. It got dreadful. It almost became unwatchable.
Yeah. To watch a team almost literally give it away. Give it away. It was crazy. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Good Labor Day to you.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, so Ron, you wanted to bring the stat of the weekend to the table tonight?
The stat of the weekend.
All right.
And I don't know if it's the greatest stat ever, but it's definitely something we kind of ironic and, you know, maybe pay attention to. The Pac-12 went 13-0 this weekend.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Yeah, you know what's funny
just
about that?
I found that hysterical. I mean, I know that, you know, some of them didn't play top teams, but some of them did.
Yeah, some of them did. Colorado. Yeah. Funny, during that game, Gus Johnson was talking about the game, and he said, you know, goes, well, Joel, it's the Big 12. And Joel Klatt had to remind him that it's not yet the
not
Big 12.
Yet.
Boy, poor Joel Klatt, man. He was, they wanted so badly. Listen, I know when I do this on the show, and it's not even close to like what Joel has to do sometimes when he's covering Colorado games. I have to talk about the Steelers in a very, objective way, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a fan, but I don't want to overlay my fandom into my discussion. So if the Steelers stink, I want to tell you they stink. If they're good, I'll tell you they're good and whatnot. That's what you want to do as a broadcast. You want to be objective as much as you can. They were trying really hard. I think Rob Stone was trying really hard to get Joel Klatt to be really giddy and excited about his alma mater getting Deion Sanders and these exciting players. And Klatt, he tried really hard to be like, nope, nope, nope. It's a national broadcast. I'm not going down that road. He's one of the great Colorado Buff quarterbacks. He was the quarterback last time they were really relevant on the national picture. But he did a really good job of making sure that objectivity, you know, was there. And he did not treat the Buffaloes with the kid gloves. I will agree with a lot of people on Twitter that made jokes like, can you tell me who the head coach of the Buffaloes are? The announcers don't seem to be saying that enough. Like, I agree with that sarcasm because that seemed to be every time they opened their mouth, it was Deion this, Deion this. And no matter what happened, it would be like Shador Sanders would throw a pass and it would be complete. And they would go, Deion, excited about that completion. And it was nonstop of that. So I do understand there's a little criticism, but it's Deion Sanders on the biggest stage, one of the biggest stages of college football.
Yeah, but how many times did they mention a coach's name?
Right, exactly.
You know, even the high profile ones, you know, Nick Saban, Jim Harbaugh, Dabo Sweeney. I mean, do they sit there and go, oh, Dabo, love that one.
Right, yeah, right. But the other sarcastic tweet was, does anybody know the name of the TCU head coach?
Like that exactly.
Was, like poor Sonny Dykes isn't getting mentioned enough in a broadcast in which he's coaching against Deion Sanders. And I don't know me. I think I would be caught up if I was Jenny Taft or any sideline reporter. I think I would get caught up and probably call him Coach Prime. But I would also think I would probably just say Coach Sanders. Because I think I wouldn't want to be caught up in the marketing.
Yeah.
Like, that's marketing. That's not his name. His name isn't Coach Prime. Coach Prime is the way he sells you stuff. I would have just said Coach Sanders, blah, 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 to try to keep it as professional as I could. But they couldn't help themselves. They were like, Coach Prime, you must be very excited about the player of your offense. That kind of thing.
Now, I'm assuming Colorado, I know they're outside the top 25. Are they getting in this week?
I think they are.
That's a good win.
Yeah.
I mean, and the funny thing was that they, you know, I you know that, I don't even know what to call it. You know that thing that's like win percentage?
Yeah, right.
You know, when you can go over the meter and it's like, oh, this team's going to win. And then all of a
based
sudden.
Based on certain circumstances of the game. Yeah.
It had TCU winning, even though they were losing.
Right,
the entire way.
There was some feeling like TCU would just get rid of this team, and it was fun while it lasted.
Turn it on, but it was but he was in control of that game. I think that was the more remarkable thing was that they took the early lead. I mean, maybe they lost the lead for a second, but they came right back and got it again, and they just controlled. He controlled the game.
Right. He certainly did. I think I agree with you. I think Colorado is getting
which
ranked.
Leads me to this thought. We've said this before about certain people, and I think it works for him now because I think the talent dust. I think the cap came off on him.
Yeah. Oh, I do too. I do too.
I mean, he excelled in baseball. He excelled in football. Now he's excelling at coaching. That's not right.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. I mean, look, it's one thing to say to throw just talent out there. He coached this team. Like he had them ready to play this game. He had them coached up. This is again, go back. This was a back and forth game. This wasn't TCU making a million mistakes and this thing got out of hand. TCU would take the lead. Colorado would take it back. TCU would then get the lead back, and then Colorado would come back. That's coaching. That's keeping everybody focused. That's calling the right plays, making sure your coordinators are all on the same page with what you want to do. look, that's the thing. We're going to have Gary Barnett coming on in hour three, and that's the one thing I want to ask him. Anyone can give a rah-rah speech. If that was the case, Tony Robbins would be a head coach in college football, right? Anybody can give a rah-rah, you can do it, just believe in yourself, everybody doubts you, go out there and show them. Like, anybody could do that, right? Like, we all could do that. But that's not what Deion Sanders is. He's not a motivational speaker. He's a head coach that can motivate you with a speech.
No, I mean,
you had to have this team prepared.
He's a great speaker.
He really
is. We all know that.
Right.
Whether he was when he was an athlete to when he was an analyst, you paid attention. He commanded your attention. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's one thing to sit there and just stand on a podium and go, you got to do this and you got to do that. He has them prepared.
He really did. He had them ready to go. They knew exactly what they were expected. And TCU was a hard team to prepare for because, as I mentioned, hardly anybody that made an impact on them last year was on the team.
Right.
Right.
That was the other thing I was going to bring up. It's like, what was the line? He brought Gucci or Louis or whatever.
Yeah, brought in Louis, right.
You know, you could totally tell.
He really could.
He's like, no, these are decent players right now. He made it a transfer portal destination with one game.
I heard about Shador Sanders, and I didn't watch a lot of Jackson State, but I saw him in the championship last year. But again, it's hard when you're not playing a Power 5 school to what level you actually can play at. But he threw a good ball, but he really lit it up. I mean, he was great. He really was great. That was the big eye-opener to me. I figured Travis Hunter would be very good, but his kid can sling it. I mean, he really can laser it in there. He threw a lot of great balls. Over-the-shoulder catches, feathered him in when he needed to, fired it in there, waited on plays to find the right open guy, ran through on the run. Like, it was a million things he did right in this game. He looked super sharp, really, really sharp. But that, yeah, I mean, you're right about Deion Sanders. I mean, this is – he didn't just – that was the big thing that people were wondering about. Okay, when you're playing at Jackson State, when you're at an HBCU school, if you bring in a kid – that should have played at Florida State like Travis Hunter, you're going to make a huge noise. You're going to make huge noise when you bring in the level of players that could have gone to a Power 5 conference but rather would go to Jackson State and play for you. Okay, so we can understand that there's a little bit of skepticism on maybe you just over-talented everybody else in the SWAC, right? Okay, did you really coach them or did you over-talent them? This was bringing those same players, a lot of those players, and players from all over to Boulder. He took a whole group of people that have no continuity whatsoever and got them on the same page quickly and got them prepared quickly and ready to go for this upcoming season, and they fired on all cylinders right off the bat. They did not – this was not a school team that was feeling itself out, figuring it out, learning each other in game settings that you can't just replicate in a practice facility. Nope, they came right out and were good. And that kudos to Deion Sanders on that. Love him, hate him. I there's a lot of things that you can love about Deion. There's a lot of things where I'll be honest with you, he has like that televangelist vibe, right? Where he says a lot of good things, but you wonder what's behind the curtain, right? There's a salesman all the time with Deion Sanders. But the reality of it is he can coach. He can coach. And I'm curious about this Buffaloes team, man. What got me curious after that game was these were really, really talented players. Really talented players. Dylan Edwards is the fastest guy on this team, and they are loaded with talented fast players, right? But if they get momentum, meaning they really believe they can beat USC and Oregon, and those are the games that are coming up this month, they're gonna make an impact. Again, there are a bunch of landmines on their schedule too. This Pac-12 again, Oregon they've got coming up. They've got USC coming up. No, DJ Oyunglele at Oregon State looked pretty good.
Utah's gonna look really good. Next week's against Nebraska,
right?
Then followed by Colorado State. So I'm thinking
they should be 3-0 going to Oregon.
Yes.
Yep.
But, I mean, then they got a tough match. It's Oregon, then USC.
Bo Nix and Oregon, yep. And then Caleb Williams. So you're talking about two of the premier quarterbacks. They'll go up against two of the premier quarterbacks. Defense does need to get better. It was, but the skill players on offense were great. And, by the way, Travis Hunter on defense was great. 129 snaps. I'm already tired talking about it. All right, we'll come back. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb in hour two. Josh Alper will join us as the NFL starts on Thursday as we continue with Wake Up Call.